This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, when the author of Wind in the Willows was writing about the escapades of toad, mole and ratty, Kenneth Graham was working on the assumption that every child would be familiar with these creatures. Well, moles are still relatively abundant, although it's hard to know how their numbers are faring. The common toad, sadly misnamed now, and water rats, or water voles as they are more properly known, well, they are now endangered and are classed as a red list species. Their populations have plummeted by roughly 90% across Britain over the last few decades, making them one of the UK's fastest declining mammals. Predation by American mink, removal of bank vegetation, river pollution and the canalisation of so many rivers have all played their part. So it's brilliant news that water voles are being reintroduced to so many Hertfordshire rivers where they were previously extinct. Now, we've heard from the Hertfordshire and Middlesex Wildlife Trust about reintroductions that they have overseen on rivers like the River Ver. But the latest reintroduction is a bit different. It's been instigated not by a wildlife charity, but by a town council on a local nature reserve that they manage. Let's hear from Senior Green Spaces Officer at Harpenden Town Council, Alex Melson, who managed the reintroduction of water voles at their Batford Springs Nature Reserve. And if you're not familiar with Batford Springs, Alex started by telling us a little bit about it.
Batford Springs is a local nature reserve situated right in the middle of Harpenden. So it's nestled alongside the River Lea, covering about 21 acres in total. It's a great reserve. It has a lovely mosaic of habitats. It includes chalk streams, the river, wildflower meadows, a reed fen and wet woodlands. So it's a lovely place to come and visit if you want to sort of see nature and enjoy the green spaces in Harpenden.
Yes, and as you say, it is right close to where people live. This isn't out in the middle of wild countryside, is it?
No, I mean, when you stand on the site, you almost feel like you are in the middle of the countryside. It is surprisingly peaceful, and it is such an important asset for the community to have that access to green space.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. It really does feel like a very accessible nature reserve. So I wondered who the organisations were that had come together to bring the water voles back to Batford Springs. I know that the Wildlife Trusts have done a lot of reintroductions with landowners, but you did it a little bit differently.
That's right. So it's not particularly common that a town council is taking a lead on a reintroduction project. That's something we're very proud of here at Harpenden Town Council, to actually be the ones leading the project. We've had plenty of support from other organisations. So you've mentioned the Wildlife Trust. They've been involved on a sort of advisory capacity, and they've also given their support in monitoring the mink population, which is really important. If we've got mink on the site, we can't reintroduce water voles.
And so why is that, Alex?
So the reason mink are particularly bad for water voles is, well, a lot of wildlife will happily predate on them. The female mink are small enough to follow them into their burrows. So even where they historically would be safe and hiding from predators, they can't escape them. So in order to have a successful release, we need to have the mink not being there. And for the last 2 years, we've not had a single recording on this stretch of the river, which is an absolutely brilliant sign for our water voles.
Fantastic. And these mink, they're not native, are they? These have come over from the States and been released as part of the decline of the fur trade. So not something that the water voles have had to evolve to cope with.
That's it. Yeah, they're released from captive, or from being captured for the mink fur trade, has allowed them to escape into the countryside. And there was always this theory that it was activists that allowed them to escape. But there have been records well beyond that they've managed to escape from the farm, from the factories before then. So it's been an ongoing problem for at least a century now. And obviously the water voles just haven't had the chance to adapt, or they can't adapt, really.
Yeah, indeed. But you've managed to make sure that Batford Springs is free of American mink. And so you thought it was a good idea to try and bring the water voles back here. So what else was it about the spot that made you think that it was a good place for water voles, not just the lack of the mink there?
So, you know, it's a great site for water voles. So first of all, first and primarily, we have a lovely water source where I go. We have the River Lee, and we've also got the worldwide rarity of a chalk stream on site. And these two habitats are almost the keystone required for waterfowls to thrive. Alongside that, we've got dense vegetation that allows them to find plenty of food and to hide from the many predators that will go for them, as well as sort of being able to easily navigate along the river to spread the population out. They've also got high banks. So these are banks that are above the river level, which allows them to create their burrows to, first of all, hide from predators, but also to nest and breed to let the pups grow in safety. We've also got slow flowing water across the site. We've got good depth. And we've also got lots of areas where it's low disturbance, where people can be kept away from the riverbanks in order for them to have their peace and quiet to live their lives.
So was any other preparation needed? So you monitored the site to make sure that there was no mink there. Did you need to do anything else to the site before having the release?
Oh, absolutely. We obviously wanted to make the release as successful as possible. And we've been doing this project for about 3 years now. Wow. So it's a few jobs we've done previously. We've done some planting along the riverbanks to increase the vegetation of what they'll eat. That not really being a problem, because waterfowls will happily eat up to 210 different species of plant and vegetation. So they're not picky at all. We also installed a few ponds on site. So these are an offline nature reserve. So when it floods, they can escape into these ponds. And alongside the ponds, we've put in a raised bank, which is above the river level. So above the flood level, sorry. And that means they can access these banks and stay dry in flood periods. We've also erected about 140 meters of fencing to keep people away from these habitats, to give them their peace. Dogs are often the biggest issue for water voles. Where you've got dog presence, they're less likely to colonize. So we've tried to create a bit of a barrier between people, water voles, and dogs. And probably most excitingly, we even purchased a large swathe of land, about 3 hectares or 7 acres in size, to expand the network that they can essentially use. So that's an extra, half a mile of river. And we've now got, in Harpenden Town Council, we now manage a mile of river, which is half of all the river that flows through Harpenden. So it's a great, so that just gives us loads of opportunities in the future to maintain and ensure they can thrive and survive.
Yes. Well, you know, that sounds amazing. And it sounds like the efforts that you've made to ensure the success of the water vole sounds like you could well be helping other species there as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Water voles is what I like to call a micro mini system eco-engineer. Unlike beavers, which are really obviously altering the landscape, water voles can do it on a much smaller scale. So, for example, when it comes to their burrows, they create lovely little openings in the riverbank. And once those burrows are abandoned, other wildlife will go in. So water shrews, bank voles, mice, and other invertebrates would happily go and take that opportunity. When they eat the dense vegetation, so often what happens is a river or bankside vegetation, you get dominant growth of certain grasses and certain vegetation. The voles will come in and they'll create gaps in that dense vegetation. And from there, new plants will come in, so like little lovely flowering plants, bankside vegetation, and that will increase opportunities for insects and invertebrates. The more insects and invertebrates we get, the more food for bats and birds. So it's got a cascading effect that actually enhances the entire landscape. So yeah, this is very exciting for just not water voles, but other wildlife.
Sounds wonderful. So you decided it would be lovely to reintroduce water voles to Batford Springs. Where on earth does one get a whole bunch of water voles from?
Well, it's usually two options. One is you find an existing population which is doing particularly well, and they're doing very well in Essex, in Sussex, in Norfolk. They're doing particularly well. The route we decided to go was we got ours captive bred from Devon. So our voles have been bred for about a year ago. They started breeding them in preparation for this release. So we ended up getting about 200 voles. So several breeding pairs were left aside for us. And from that, they made sure there was a good genetic diversity that would be coming to Batford, so we wouldn't end up with a whole problem of inbreeding. So it was carefully monitored by the team at Derek Gow Consultancy, who are based in Devon. They're the ones who breed the voles for us. And, well, I mean, being voracious breeders, voles will produce potentially up to between 3 and 8 pups a season, and you can do that about 5 times a year. So you can get quite good numbers from a single breeding pair. And they basically pack them up for us, check the genders, lift the little skirt, make sure they're male or female, pop them in the pens and drive them from Devon to Batford.
Well, that sounds remarkably simple, actually. So can you tell us how the release took place? Did you involve any local people in this? Or how did it happen?
Yeah, so we work very closely with the Batford Springs volunteers, who are the local volunteer group who help us manage Batford Springs as part of a management plan. And we had about probably over the course of the week, 30 volunteers come down to help us during the entire process. So the first day, the voles came down from Devon, or came up to from Devon. We built the pens, filled it with hay, and transported each pen to the right location. And then all these pens have to be at least 30 meters away from each other because of breeding territories. But we put the pens in place. The voles then went into their habitats. And for the next 2 or 3 days, every day we went back in to feed each vole, which coincidentally is 1/4 apple and 1/4 carrot per vole. So yeah, lovely little diet there. And on the fourth day, we put in the baffle boards, which are essentially the release method. So you pop those in the front of the pens, and it basically allows the voles to choose to leave if they wish. And then we leave them for one day, give them a bit extra food, and they'll be coming and going. And it was great to see all the water vole poo at the entrance, showing that they were coming and going. And on the final day, we collect the pens up, make sure that all the voles have left, which thankfully they did. And then we just send them back.
Wow. That must have been quite emotional for you, launching all these water voles to their new life, seeing them all go off.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just great that the whole community was really behind the release. So it was great to see.
Yeah, fantastic. So how will you know if it's been a success, if they're thriving there?
So what we'll be doing is, over the next couple of years, probably starting in August and September time, we're going to train some volunteers up alongside some members of staff, and we're going to basically conduct surveys. And what this generally involves is getting on waders, jumping in the rivers safely or the short stream, and wading through all the vegetation, looking for few signs. So the obvious signs, or the main signs we're looking for, are little latrines, which is just piles of water vole poo piled up in vegetation. And this is essentially used as a scent marker to confirm territories, because water voles are very territorial during spring and summer, and females particularly will make sure that their length of river is protected. And that's what they do with the poos. They scent mark it and make sure everyone knows that it's theirs. Males, less bothered. They'll just roam much further and do their business. We're also looking for vegetation that's been eaten, and they always cut about a 45-degree angle, which is quite interesting. They'll create little leaf piles as well, so that's something else we'll be looking for. Obviously, the burrows as well. Ideally, we shouldn't be finding them because they should be quite well hidden. But we'll find burrows and little runways between their burrows. So little moan paths.
Yeah. Wow. And when you do that, you'll be able to have a rough estimation of whether there's more water voles, less water voles, whether they're happy doing their thing there. Fantastic. Yeah. So if we visit Batford Springs, will we see the water voles?
Well, if you're lucky, quiet and patient, you should hopefully be able to see water voles swimming between the riverbanks. So ironically, water voles aren't the best swimmers. They're generally quite clumsy. So when they do go for a swim, you often hear a plop sound. They will plop into the river very unelegantly, swim across to the bank, and then start doing their burrowing and eating on that side. So usually you'll see them cutting across, but their preferred habitat is actually on the bank side, where they'll be living most of their lives, because, funnily enough, water vole fur isn't actually waterproof. So they're not particularly, they're designed for water, but not that well designed for it.
Okay. So there's a chance that you might see them there, but there's all sorts of other wildlife at Batford Springs that we can see if we are to go there.
Oh, absolutely. You can get a good, we can see a lot of wildlife. So we've got everything from frogs and newts, amphibians. We've got a good collection of birds. So we've got reed warblers, settee warblers, We've got herons. If you're lucky, you get a kingfisher darting along the chalk streams, which is great. The heron will be around. We get badgers on site, otters, foxes, a very good population of wildlife. And of course, I'm forgetting the obvious ones, fish. Lots and lots of fish in our chalk stream. So it's a great place to come and down and sort of immerse yourself in wildlife.
Indeed. Well, it sounds like you have added the water voles to what is already a very beautiful place that wildlife is obviously enjoying, and that because it's so close, as you say, to Harpenden, people are enjoying too. Alex, thank you so much for telling us about that today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
I was talking there to Senior Green Spaces Officer at Harpenden Town Council, Alex Melson. And I'm so impressed by Alex's enthusiasm and by the careful work that's been done to ensure that the water voles will have the best possible chance to thrive. Let's hope they do so that, unlike recent generations, today's local children will have the chance to be familiar with those adorable creatures for many years to come. Now, next week is Swift Awareness Week, and there's loads of swift walks organised by local swift groups in Hartford, Hitchin, Sawbridgeworth and Ware. I'll pop a link to the Swift Awareness Week events page into the notes that go with the podcast of this show and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. And even if you can't get out on an official walk, perhaps take a moment to look up for this boomerang-shaped bird speeding effortlessly through the sky near you. Now, swifts nest almost exclusively in crevices in buildings, so if you do have swifts in the sky near you, the best way that you can help them is by attaching a swift nesting box onto your house up near the eaves, or better still, if you're planning building work, by incorporating swift bricks into your building so that the swifts will find a home there too. Food-wise, well, swifts help us out by eating airborne insects, many of which are garden and crop pests, so they will be returning your hospitality. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.